every Bitcoiner should be happy that this is happening, that we don't yet have complacency in the network.
This seems to have just been a complete mess. It trickled into X, and you have users on both sides fighting and screaming at each other.
There is no such thing as a rare Satoshi. There is no, this Satoshi is worth this much, and that one is worth that much. Internally to the system, all Satoshis are created equal.
Everyone will demand payment in Bitcoin. That's what they're then going to have. So that's what they're going to need to spend. They're going to use it for their savings vehicle. There is no use case for the dollar once enough of the world wakes up to what Bitcoin really is.
If you don't do your homework and you think buying some ETF or MicroStrategy stock or keeping your coins on Coinbase is a good idea, then sooner or later you are going to find out.
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Knut Zvonholm. Knut is an awesome guy. I had the chance to meet him at BTC Prague, and we dig into basically all of the hot topics. We talked about mining centralization, which is his chief concern in Bitcoin, the knots versus core debate, which he has a fairly nuanced take on. We talk about Bitcoin treasury companies. His unpopular opinions are fantastic. I think you're going to really love this episode. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got Knut here. Knut, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, this will be fun. I think we are going to upset some folks who maybe are a bit more sensitive about some of these topics. I told you offline, you've been precisely. You've been pretty fiery lately on Twitter. I think that's kind of maybe a state that you just exist in on online, but Lots of stuff going on. What is your current assessment of the state of Bitcoin? What are some of your biggest concerns or frustrations at the moment?
Well, the biggest concern is miner centralization. And I think we fix that by running Datum and Stratum V2 and stuff like that. So in my opinion, a miner is only a miner if he's actually aware of what block he's mining on. Otherwise, it's just a mere hash salesman and not an actual Bitcoin miner, and not participating in the decision making that comes and the responsibility. Like, with great powers comes great responsibility, as Spider-Man once said, or Spider-Man's uncle once said. So, and I think miners should look out for their own interests, and the more long term thinking they are, the better. Like, the lower the time preference of the miner, the better, because as a miner, you don't want to undermine unintended Bitcoin. So,
you think that this is more or less resolved, and it's just a matter of time before we see blocks being found by more pools than just the handful that tend to dominate,
or necessarily more pools, but more individual miners in those pools, so that it's not the pool owner that sets the rules for what block they're actually mining on. And Ocean is one alternative that does that lets the individual miner decide what block he's looking for. So that's a thing, because like the idea is that if mining becomes too centralized, we can just tell those miners to fuck off and split the chain and whatnot. But in reality, mining might already be decentralized. I am not 100% sure if it is. Because of it's hard to track the ownership of these things and who owns what. But right now, the security model is more like, yeah, we trust the miners to do the right thing because they would not shoot themselves in the foot. And that's not as strong a security model as just Bitcoin's intended security model, which is this will fix itself because people will stay, or Bitcoiners will stay vigilant, run their nodes, and make sure that everyone is doing what they're supposed to do.
Did you see that recent, there was some news that came out, the Bank of International Settlements is talking about potentially trying to mark individual Satoshis. And so depending on how they've been used, spent, coin joined, what have you, they're talking about basically rating them like on a scale of 0 to 100. And I guess the intent, we've looked at it, I've talked about it. I haven't dug deeply into what they're thinking, but my sense is this is like a form of censorship. And so if we don't have mining centralization, if you can't guarantee that your sats will be confirmed in a block, that your transaction will make it through, there's like this potential there's a potential for censorship as long as mining is centralized, obviously. But it looks like maybe the high ups are thinking about a way of trying to enforce that. I don't know if you have any comment on that without knowing much else.
I saw the article. I don't know how legit that article is to begin with, but if it's a real thing, it's like the thing is like all of these chain anal companies, as I prefer to call them, and chain analytics in general, is a retarded game, because right now you cannot prove that ownership of a Bitcoin. In fact, you cannot own a Bitcoin. So, because the only thing you have is a secret that you keep from everyone else. This is either your actual private key or the location of your private key or a PIN code or whatever. But at the end of the day, the thing that allows you to move the Bitcoins and disallows everyone else to move them is a string of information. It's a secret. So there is no way to prove that anyone owns any Bitcoin. This is not real. Nor is it possible to prove that, theoretically, every single person on Earth can own all 21 million Bitcoin, or at least the ones that have been mined. We have no way of disproving that that is true, because it could be true. So, because it's just information, you can't really own them. Not your keys, not your coins means this is informational money. This is not what you think it is. And the same is true for the notion of a specific Satoshi. Satoshis aren't specific. There is no such thing as a rare Satoshi. There is not this Satoshi is worth this much and that one is worth that much. Internally to the system, all Satoshis are created equal. Like it's the same thing. They never move. The only thing that happens is like a balance on a spreadsheet is one number goes up, another number goes down. It's just like an inch doesn't change because I measure my dick with it. Like that's not how inches work, nor dicks for that matter. So I hope this doesn't get taken down because I said dick too early in the video and now I said it 3 times. But anyway, you bleep it if you have to. But that's the thing, that there is no such thing as a rare Satoshi. And there is no such thing even as owning Bitcoin. It's just keeping having asymmetrical information or like information that you believe it's very implausible that other people have. That's the only, you can act as if you owned an asset because you personally find it very improbable that someone else has access to the same key that you do. But that's the only reason that you act as if you own the Bitcoin. But you don't actually own them. You don't even, like, you don't possess them. You don't own them. It's just information. So all of these things, like, they can try and they can attack as much as they want. But if you as a Bitcoiner, if you're worried about stuff like this, you're in Bitcoin for the wrong reasons. And you don't really understand how powerful the notion of information as a value communication system is a pure informational money because it's not what you think it is.
Yeah. Would you agree that those choke points are feasible though if people aren't taking self-custody, aren't running their own node, aren't contributing hash rate to the network, aren't, you know, defining their own block template? Those kinds of things.
Well, fiat around and find out. Like if the thing is, this the core tenets of this project haven't changed. Not your keys, not your coins still applies. Bitcoin only, everything else is shit, still applies. If it can only be discovered once. paper Bitcoins is not Bitcoin. Still true. So like if you don't do your homework and you think buying some ETF or MicroStrategy stock or keeping your coins on Coinbase is a good idea, then sooner or later you are going to find out. It's as simple as that. So yeah, learn how to coin join, learn how to do all the other stuff. Like, do your homework. That's Bitcoin is for anyone, not everyone. And that's a good thing because it's for the responsible class of people.
Right. I completely agree with that. The concern that I have is that people pay attention to what the BIS is doing or to what anyone is doing. And believe that to mean that there is some, like, there does not have to be a choke point for Bitcoin, I think is part of the point you're making. The question is whether or not you're going to continue to operate with trusted third parties who could be a choke point, right? If you're trying to transact, if you're keeping your coins on an exchange, for example, that is very much a choke point. First of all, because it's not your keys, not your coins, to your point, but also that particular entity could be co-opted by government, by the BIS, by a regulator, whoever.
But this has always been the problem. Like the biggest problems with Bitcoin are the on and off ramps, and they are problematic, not because of Bitcoin, but because of the system that Bitcoin is a remedy to, the fiat system. So everything, for instance, if you buy your coins off of a KYC, the exchange, like Bitcoin, this is how Bitcoin works. If I sell you Bitcoin on chain, like real basics, if I sell you a Bitcoin from a specific UTXO, you get a certain amount, I get a certain amount of change, and a fee goes to the miner. That's what happens on chain, right? And I now know that you have that Bitcoin. I know that you have access to that key. I don't know if anyone else does, because you could tell someone else, but I know that you have it. And therefore, I can vaguely connect you to the quote-unquote ownership of that coin. And this is what the chain analytics thing is. And the exchanges are often forced by government institutions to use one of these chain anal services should these Bitcoins be sold somewhere on an exchange for a large sum of money into a bank account. So, but in most cases, unless you're a suspect, unless they suspect you for doing some big economic crime, nothing will happen if you move your coins. Their triggers are when it touches the banking system again. So more importantly than not buying your Bitcoins off of a KYC exchange, is to never sell to a KYC exchange. Two things happen then. They will report you to some authority, which may come home to you with a bunch of guns and threaten you to pay your ransom or taxes. And the other thing that happens is that the coins end up on the exchange, making the exchange wealthier. And sooner or later, they'll end up in the pockets of Michael Sager or someone else that this exchange sells money to. So, and I prefer if as many individuals as possible held Bitcoin without anyone else knowing. So what we want is like for these coins to get into the hands of regular people. And this is not the way. If we want that to happen, like the best thing to start doing is to start accepting Bitcoin for your goods and services. And you'll have to figure it out. No, there is no standard model here. Everyone will have to figure it out for themselves how to do that, which can be very tricky. It can take a while before you figure out a way how to do that. And you want to do it, sure, I would say you want to do it lawfully rather than legally. Legal refers to laws that are man-made. Lawful is natural law. In other words, property rights, which can be discovered and do not have to be invented by men. And in my opinion, the lawful laws are to be respected, because otherwise society breaks down.
legal laws can be taken with a grain of salt because they differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, which is in itself very unfair. That different, just because I guess you're in the US now, considering the flag behind you, and different laws apply to you than to me. Why is that? How is that fair? Like, what the fuck is that? It's strange. When you really think about it, there's nothing moral about a different set of laws applying to you than to me. So, figure out a way of how to acquire the Bitcoins without these men with guns knowing that you have them. Like that. And if you need to, because the men with guns threaten you that if you don't tell them that you have the Bitcoin, they are going to be very naughty to you, then at least separate your stacks. So have a non-KYC'd one and a KYC'd one. So you can be selective here. This is the whole point. This is about individual freedom and us taking back our own reins and like taking back the driver's seat of our lives. So that these men with guns no longer can, their opinions don't have to matter anymore. But this only happens if we actually start using this thing as the freedom tool it was always intended to be, and trade with one another, provide with one another with goods and services, and cut out that fiat middleman completely once and for all. This is the way.
Amen. So if I could perhaps summarize, buy peer-to-peer, self-custody, run a node, apply some hash rate to the network, yeah. Create your own block templates.
If you want to, yeah.
Yeah, ideally though, those are the, I would say get your no KYC Bitcoin and self-custody and run a node are like the
foundation. And run your rules on your node. Like you decide what Bitcoin is, you decide what you want to relay. Like, It's not censorship to not relay transactions that you don't want to relay. You don't owe anyone anything. Like, this is all about individual freedoms, and you decide. Like, that's the beauty of this system, and it doesn't work without that, which is even more beautiful. That's a hinty transition. But I would say, if you already have a KYC stack, try to slowly but surely convert that into a non-KYC one. Like, it can be done.
So you transitioned us nicely into my next topic, and that is you've been outspoken on the core versus knots debate. Obviously, core changing, removing the customization option on OpReturn, removing the limit. Could you maybe frame how you think about that? How you arrived at the conclusion you did, and then maybe more broadly, where you stand like on ossification versus further development of the Bitcoin protocol?
Yeah, so I've changed my views somewhat on this during this summer because I've talked to a lot of people from both camps, and I understand where these people are coming from. So I think to give an overview, you have two main groups here, and one is the 180 IQ developer that knows a lot about computers and programming and networks and protocols and how this thing actually works technically. The other group would be the principled monetary maxis group that know about money and know about Austrian economics and have read up. They have read Human Action several times, and they've read Rothbard and Hoppe and Holtzman and all of this other stuff, right? So these are the two circles, and ideally you want your Bitcoiner to be in the center of that Venn diagram. You want them to know about computing stuff, and you want them to know about monetary economics from the ground up. Ideally, you'd want your core developers to run their own nodes and have a large stack of Bitcoin to protect, so they have skin in the game. Right now, that does not seem to be the case. It seems like you have these two different camps that want different things. So on the one hand, Bitcoin can change and should change at some point to make things like the Lightning Network possible. It has changed in the past on several occasions, of course. It updates every now and then. And Bitcoin Core, the biggest Bitcoin client that most people use for their nodes, it has been like, in the past, people have, almost all Bitcoiners have been running Bitcoin Core because their values have been aligned with the values of the Bitcoin users. But now it seems like there's an increasingly big divide between what the users want and what these people want. And there's also pressure on the core developers. They are not immune to being pressured from different interest groups in Bitcoin that may want other things than the actual users want. So your average, your normal Bitcoin user, your normal pleb usually wants Bitcoin to do three things: send, receive, and not inflate. Like, that's it. You want to be able to send and receive them, and that they stay finite, right? That's like the base layer use case. We want this to be money. Whereas these other people may want to enable, add improvements that may enable layer twos that peg into Bitcoin, that allows for smart contracts or whatever, other things. And that's the developer type. And the developer type can be very frustrated with the Austrian economics type, because this camp wants Bitcoin to not change, while this camp wants Bitcoin to change. And the vice versa, this camp can be very annoyed with this camp because we don't want to move forward and break things. We want to move slowly so that we don't break things. Now, the debate here between knots and core, knots is a reaction to how core has acted lately in easing up the their policies on spam filtering. And it can be debated how effective spam filtering is. There are many different viewpoints on this topic. Some people say that spam filtering is very effective, and other people say that spam filtering isn't effective at all. And therefore, like, the latest core proposal is to, one of the things in the latest version, Bitcoin Core version 30, is to ease the rules, especially for op return, to go from 83 bytes to basically unlimited. And therefore, we will incentivize these scammers and spammers to put their data there instead of in more harmful places on the blockchain. The counter argument to that is that there is no guarantee at all that they will do that. They can still put shit everywhere else and spam the chain in whatever way they want. And also, Bitcoin Core is not like a democracy. It's not a thing that sort of, Bitcoin Core development is not something that really should be shouted about and debated on X or other social media. But this debate has sort of fired up because the users were saw a problem and took it up. And Core have been, to say the least, very undiplomatic in this. And I think that's a huge contributor to why Bitcoin knots is now over 17% of the nodes. Then you have concepts like economic nodes, which means nodes that are relatively large nodes that receive relatively large Bitcoin transactions. They are the ones that actually have a say in the network. But I think the term economic node is sort of retarded, because every single person on Earth is an economic node in some sense. We are not separated. We all influence one another in our economic decisions. Even like Coinbase, for instance, can't run whatever node they want. They still have user interests to cater to. Just like a company can't do whatever they want with their money because they have shareholders. Like, so. My point there is that everything's connected, and you can't just disregard some parts of the system. And I'd say what I want personally for Bitcoin is for Bitcoiners to stay vigilant and stay alert, because the day that the nodes are no longer in charge, but the miners or the developers or the bigger companies, that's the day when Bitcoin does not work anymore. then Bitcoin is by definition a shitcoin like all the others. So we need the nodes to be in charge. That's our saving grace. That's what got me so deep into Bitcoin in the first place, when the block size wars were won by the users and not the biggest companies in the space. That's when I was convinced that this thing actually works. It's worth fighting for. It's the best tool, hopeful tool for individual freedoms we will ever get in our lifetimes, and I'm gonna devote my life to it. That's the single reason that nodes are in charge. Miners are slaves, and they're supposed to be. So and the developers too. They are going to have to do what we want them to do. So we'll see what happens. I'd say that I personally think that Datum and the decentralizing mining by people, the hash salesmen actually being miners rather than just hash salesmen, is a bigger thing than the spam issue, really. That's the core, pun intended, core underlying problem.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I'm curious, though, if a change to the protocol, like the operator debate that we've been having, is something that is being proposed and has enough attention that it needs to be addressed and discussed, what would be the mechanism or the process by which we should go about considering the adoption of it? Because this seems to have just been a complete mess. It trickled into X, and you have users on both sides fighting and screaming at each other. What would be the most appropriate way for a change like this to happen in the future, in your view?
Well, first of all, it's not for me to say. Like, I view Bitcoin as something for me to study rather than for me to try to influence. It's its own organism. However, the way I can influence that, whatever that organism is like I can try to protect it from changes that I think may be harmful to it. So I'd say, like this 17% NOTS nodes is to be compared to the number of nodes that are actually upgrading to Bitcoin Core 30. And NOTS is actually winning that race, telling you that Bitcoiners are at the edge of their seat here, and they're doing their homework, and they're seeing this for what it is. Regardless if you think NOTS is efficient or not, or appropriate or not, every Bitcoiner should be happy that this is happening, that we don't have that we don't yet have complacency in the network. Like, we are awake. We do react to things. Everyone should celebrate that. So, but what the correct way to address it is, like, I'm running NOTS. That's my choice. That's how I address it. Other Bitcoiners may address it differently. And as long as it's an informed decision that you make on your own, then I'm all for it.
I agree with that. It's been cool to see, what regardless of which side of the debate you're on, I think it's cool to see that NOTS has gained so much traction, not necessarily because it's right or wrong. I'm running NOTS as well for many of the reasons you described, but that Bitcoiners, we're still at a point in Bitcoin's existence that Bitcoiners are awake enough to take the time to figure out how to switch to NOTS or how to spin up a new node and run NOTS. And to me, that's very promising that we're still attentive to what's going on the network, because I think there's a day where there's going to be a small cohort of people still being Bitcoiners as we know them to be today. And the rest of the world is just using it as money, the way that you use your refrigerator to cool your food. They have no idea how it works. They're not doing anything. It just does, you know, it just does what they want it to do. So let's turn to the other hot topic of the day, Bitcoin treasury companies.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear, you've had some good tweets about this. I'll let you just speak for yourself, though, rather than me reading any of those. What is your general perspective? And by the way, I want to distinguish between, we're going to talk about treasury companies that are creating products, their investment vehicles now for retail investors, institutional, versus a dental office who just uses free cash flow to acquire Bitcoin and create their own reserve so to speak. So we're talking about, obviously, the MicroStrategies, the MetaPlanets. What is your general opinion on those? And then we'll kind of go from there and see what we can dig into.
I have mixed feelings about them. I do understand that this is a way to tap into huge pools of cash that couldn't have been tapped into otherwise. If it wasn't for MicroStrategy, we couldn't have all the value from all the money held by the boomer generation couldn't have been funneled into Bitcoin the way it has via MicroStrategy. But then again, fiat around and find out and play stupid games and win stupid prizes. But all the Bitcoins owned by these corporations and the strategic reserve people of the world, and especially the US ones, because I believe the regulation, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe the regulation says that you have to have them with a custodian, right? An audited custodian, if you're a company. Yeah. Which means that MicroStrategy has all their Bitcoins with Coinbase. Which means that at the end of the day, who really owns the coins, or quote-unquote owns, this is what we talked about in the beginning, that you can't really own a Bitcoin. It's just a string of information. The guy who has that string of information is called some guy at Coinbase. And some guy at Coinbase, or 5 out of 7 guys at Coinbase, or whatever it is, can be multi-sig, it probably is. And maybe there's different jurisdictions and different key holders or whatever. But if your Bitcoin is with a custodian, some guy at Coinbase may, at any point in time, fuck off and buy an island somewhere and just disappear off the face of the earth. Just like Satoshi did. Like, this is totally possible. So that risk is something that you will have to be aware of when you're buying these things. So if you would take MicroStrategy as an example, which I believe is one of the safer ones of these investments, that it's still like they own paper Bitcoin that Coinbase accounts for, and then some guy at Coinbase that has the actual private key. There's the risk there. So instead of buying the underlying assets, you're buying this paper up on paper thing. Also, if what's the tweet I did the other day? If the product is you get more dollars, and the company providing this service simultaneously acquires more Bitcoin, you're the loser. Because you don't want more dollars unless you get like 45% per year. Like, if you can't keep up with the number go up in Bitcoin, then you lost. That most of these investment theses are wrong because of one thing. People are not denominating in Bitcoin yet. If they did, that they would see easily that all of their stocks are losing value, their house is losing value, everything is losing value compared to Bitcoin, because this is what Bitcoin does. It shows you how much how fool you've been by the system that can literally print money out of thin air and gives you truth goggles to view the world through, so that you can see that the natural state of the free market is deflation, and that all the prices in the world drop as they should. That's what Bitcoin does. It shows you the world as it is, not as the politicians want you to believe it is. So I think to a certain extent the strategic reserves are this cycle shit coins, because a lot of these companies are going to rug pull you. They're doing it to pump up their stock and then sell that stock and take profit and buy more Bitcoin than you could. So I'd advise people to buy the Bitcoins and self-custody them. Like, as I said before, the system hasn't changed. It works exactly the same. All the principles are still valid. Like, everything we said 10 years ago, it still applies. Hold your own keys. Get your off exchanges. Try not to be KYC'd. Like, yeah.
So there seem to be two schools of thought on the treasury companies, their existence. And one of them is, I had Mark Moss on the podcast maybe a month ago, and he thinks there is room for perhaps thousands of treasury companies in different jurisdictions offering different products and services to predominantly institutional. I don't think he thinks this is a product generally for retail Bitcoiners, unless you want to speculate and sort of gamble on which one you think might hit big. And then you've got people, I'm trying to think of who I've talked to recently, but who generally think it's a winner-take-most sort of market. And MicroStrategy, for example, is way out ahead. Metaplanet is now seeing pressure from, a $2 trillion Japanese company with a much broader array of products and services.
Japanese-American, I'd say.
Okay. And so my without living in this world, and I don't track this incredibly closely, but my general sense is it's going to be a winner take most market. I think MicroStrategy is out so far ahead, and they're going to be able to operate in probably many jurisdictions.
Yeah, but the difference with Bitcoin here is that winner take most doesn't mean that anyone else loses. It means everyone wins. Like, it's not a zero sum game like fiat, that the winner takes all means that everyone else is worse off. Bitcoin, the gains are absolute. They're not relative to the other guy. Like every other Bitcoin company wins if Michael Saylor takes all. Like you know what I mean? Like if you already have Bitcoin, number go up applies to you too. So your personal purchasing power compared to you 2 years ago is now way bigger because what Michael did. So that's the good part.
My point, though, is if you're a Metaplanet investor, say, while Metaplanet, who is accumulating Bitcoin at a very high rate, they as a company might win. Does that necessarily correlate to shareholders who bought the stock winning in fiat terms?
I think in the long run, they can't outcompete Bitcoin. That would be impossible, wouldn't it? If you extrapolate this out into infinity, which I always like to, when there's a new thing, I like to extrapolate the thought vector as far into the future as I possibly can. And that is hyper-Bitcoinization. The dollar is worth nothing. What are you going to price these things in Bitcoin? And how are they going to be worth more than the Bitcoin they hold on their balance sheets? Like, it's impossible. It will have to crash at some point. And right now, I think a MicroStrategy stock outperformed Bitcoin by 3x or something. I don't know the exact numbers. I don't follow this very closely. But the last couple of years, it cannot do that forever. It will have to decouple from the underlying asset that makes it valuable. That is the only thing that makes it valuable in the first place. So while I would agree with everything Mark Moss told you, I'm not at all as excited as he is about it. Like I much prefer to see self-custody Bitcoins in the hands of individuals and people running their own nodes and not falling for scams. That's much more important for the longevity of this thing, which is the only important part. Like if it can't last forever, then the experiment is dead. It was never meant to be. We can go on living in the matrix and try to do whatever we can with it. That is not a hopeful place to be. So to me, I'd much rather think about the individuals and their nodes and their incentives than these bigger players.
Yeah, I tend to fall pretty firmly in your camp on that one, yeah. I think. So I would assume then that you agree with nation state adoption. So you've probably seen in the US, I mean, they've really fumbled the strategic reserve thus far, which fine with me. More for me, couldn't care less. Yeah. The only way you can accumulate Bitcoin is through theft, in my view.
No, the only law that I'm pro, the only Bitcoin legislation I would be for is... It's a lack of legislation. The meaning, no capital gains tax, because that's. But then again, I wouldn't like any tax on anything, especially not capital gains taxes. But I'm against all taxes. But let's say they drop the cap gains tax on Bitcoin, that would be great. Strategic reserves, fuck that. I don't want the government to have any money. Least of all the best money in the world. I don't like Bitcoin is for enemies, but that doesn't mean I like my enemies. I don't like my enemies to have Bitcoin. I'd like good people to have Bitcoin, like any other thing in the world. I I don't like governments are my enemies. They do bad things. They are based on theft and violence. I don't want them to have any money at all. So I cheer for whenever they lose their Bitcoin. And it's the same thing with them. They will lose their Bitcoins because they're held by a custodian somewhere. But there's no way that the U.S. administration actually has a multisig in the White House. Like, I just don't buy that. Yeah. So the way I envision it is like, you remember the last scene of Fight Club, the final scene of Fight Club, when the guy has just realized that he's a crazy schizophrenic and he's shot himself through the face. But he's there with his girlfriend and all the credit card company skyscrapers are falling. There's a blackout and civilization collapses. That's what I'm looking forward to. That's the future I want to see. I was like, we can live happily ever after.
Yeah. The thing for me, while Bitcoin is for enemies, my complaint with an SBR is my preference would be that anyone accumulating Bitcoin, whether I like them, prefer them having it or not, is that it's done so in an ethical fashion. And to your point, the only way that government is not a net producer.
Government does not do anything in an ethical fashion. They just, that's just not their modus operandi. So like the problem, the illness that Bitcoin is a remedy to is the US dollar. Like first and foremost, it's an antidote to the US dollar and the fiat monetary system that we currently live in. That's what Bitcoin fixes. And as we move into the future, these two systems cannot coexist. Like and it's for very simple reasons. You have one system that is completely deflationary, showing you that when people practice doing stuff, they get better at doing stuff. So oil prices should drop forever. Like a sandwich in the airport is more expensive now than 5 years ago. Why? Is it harder to make a sandwich now or easier? It's obviously easier. Every single ingredient in the sandwich and how it got there is easier now because everyone practiced the methods of all of the supply chains and everything. Everything's better. But it's costlier for some reason. The only reason is that someone is printing money. So oil prices should drop forever. And they do if you measure from Bitcoin. So you have this system. You can measure from this system where everything is dropping forever. Or you can measure from the other system that has to inflate over and over again. Because it's based. The only thing that makes it work is that it becomes worse over time. In order for it to have stable prices, so even if inflation was on paper zero, that would not reflect what is actually going on in the economy. That is still an enormous amount of theft. And most people don't understand this, but stable prices means you're being robbed. Like maniacs are taking most of the cake because for the simple reason that we get better at doing things. Like this smartphone, it contains, this is would have been James Bond's wet dream 20 years ago. Like all the movies in the world, all the books in the world, all the TV shows in the world, all the music albums in the world, a flashlight, a GPS, a speaker, all the games I could, like the Game Boy and whatnot, much superior gaming device than was ever. All of that is in this thing. This is made out of sand mostly. Humanity turned sand into this, not because of some centralized authority, but the free market signals made this happen despite government intervention and inflation. So that's how powerful the free market is, even in a shit economy with shit money. So imagine what sound money and a global economy could do. Like, it's just insane how good that is. It means everything drops to almost zero. And we get into this world where we'll need money less and less because everything's so abundant. Once you see it, it's so obvious because you can just, anyone on earth could see it if they just put on the Bitcoin goggles and measure from that system. They see the world for what it really is. while they see the other side, and that has to hyperinflate. So these two cannot coexist. The only reason Bitcoin wouldn't win that is if by some for some unforeseen reason Bitcoin would stop working. And I don't think it will. Like, what would make it stop working?
Yeah. I think that's a really good way of framing it. I think Saifedean's gunpowder analogy comes to mind, right?
Yeah.
There's just like this tipping point where the gunpowder is here. Most of the world doesn't realize it yet. And so they're still fighting with sticks and slingshots and swords. And once they recognize the gunpowder is here, they'll be forced to. And so the capitulation is coming in my view. And so why, to your point, but real quick to your point that they can't coexist. The reason they can't coexist isn't because mechanically it's incompatible. It's because the incentives for them to both exist are effectively impossible.
No, everyone is so superior.
Everyone will demand payment in Bitcoin. That's what they're then going to have. So that's what they're going to need to spend. They're going to use it for their savings vehicle. There is no use case for the dollar once enough of the world wakes up to what Bitcoin really is.
No, it's like cars and horses. They cannot coexist. Well, horses are only on roads as a novelty these days. And the same will be true for dollars. I look at this old museum thing I found here.
Like, great bookmarks. Great bookmarks.
Exactly. Yeah. Back to the gun analogy, if you see the evolution of attack and defense over and weaponry and armor during civilization, like, first you have fisticuffs, right? I hit you and I take your wife and your stuff. And then someone invents a shield, and then you can hit and a spear, and then you're, you know, better than the other guy. All of a sudden you have the knight in armor during the feudal era, and the knight in shiny armor with a broadsword on horseback. He was impervious to, like, the spears and stones and stuff couldn't damage him because he was ironclad. So he could be like the mountain from Game of Thrones and go rape a pillage as much as he liked, until someone invented gunpowder, and now you could shoot the knight. And people who weren't necessarily big and strong, but maybe cunning and clever, could win fights instead of the bigger guy. But then, like, Bitcoin is an evolution of that. So armor and weapons have sort of co-evolutionized. that had a similar evolutionary process. What Bitcoin does is it provides you with something that changes the incentive for aggression. Because as we were talking about before, I cannot prove how many Bitcoins another person has. So I can, this is the analogy of I use everywhere. I can threaten you and ask you to give me all your Bitcoins. And I, as the attacker, have no way of knowing how much I really got. You could have 100 times more than what you gave to me. So for me, statistically, it's a better idea to provide something of value back to you than to attack you, incentivizing us all to be civilized rather than barbaric and take each other's stuff. Like, in the fiat system, is better to take, as government clearly shows. Like, the public sector is, in Europe, the average public sector is 50%. Like, the public sector, private sector divide is like almost half the population is working in the public sector, all funded by FEFT. Right? Like, it's insane when you start thinking about it as it really is. But Bitcoin takes away the incentive to do that. Much better to just give something of value back. It's literally a tool for peace. So I'm very hopeful.
Well said. Yeah. So do you have a prediction though on governments and their adoption of Bitcoin? Do you think that they, like, how awake do you think they are to what's this shift that's happening? And do you think they're going to respond in some meaningful way where we see reserves, like actual meaningful reserves from governments or anything like that?
No, and reserves, I mean, as I said before, it's not really theirs. It's some guy at Coinbase and, you know, that the final scene of Fight Club. I believe they will try to prolong the current system for as long as they can. And the ones that actually do understand it, like this is the beauty of it. If you understand it, there's no way you'll stay in the old system and defend that. You just switch. And this goes for politicians too. At the end of the day, they're human beings. So the ones who understand will already be Bitcoiners. And the ones that don't understand it, I mean, they're not a threat. They can't do anything about it except for fight for the old system, and they will be increasingly laughed at for doing so, because it's so obvious that the new system is superior. So I think they will, you know, first they laugh at you, then they fight you, then that whole thing. That's true for the other side of that thing too. Like it starts with first they control you, and then we doubt them, and it ends with us laughing at them because they're not able to do anything. This is true already for the people who are already in Bitcoin, who are sort of above all national laws and stuff, and are already doing this and living this way. Catch me if you can type of way. So they'll try to fight back, but like strength in numbers, the more Bitcoiners there are, the more powerful we are. Governments in democracies can't impose super unpopular policies, because the people will be against them if they try to. And it's just like torrent files like 20 years ago. Sure, Hollywood and the intellectual property mafia attacked some big honeypots like the Pirate Bay and stuff like that. But individual users who just downloaded a movie or something, they were pretty safe. And I think this will be true for Bitcoin too. And it's very unlikely that they'll go after the individual user, because it's costly to do so. It's not worth it. And it's more and more true the more of us there are. And the more Bitcoin we have in individual pleb hands.
Do you have a timeline that you anticipate this, like the hyper-Bitcoinization paradigm playing out and fiat effectively becoming worthless? Like, do you think this is something that happens in the next 5 years, decade, 20 years? Is it 50 years? Are we looking at a really long time horizon in your view?
It's a super hard question to answer, and it's predictions are about the future are always wrong.
Give your best wrong answer.
My best wrong answer, my least wrong answer. So I'd say that it's likely that Bitcoin goes in cycles, and that's how market psychology works. So Bitcoin, what was that? Someone said, oh, it was Adam Back, I think, who told me that Bitcoin bull runs usually just last 18 days, like for most of the cycles. It's been downwards for most of the year. And if you're not on board when these 18 days happen, you're fucked. Like, then you lost money over it. If you're planning to sell, if you just accumulate and hodl over the decades, you didn't lose anything, because you still have your Bitcoins. Anyway, so I think it's likely that it'll still go in these cycles where it 10x's and then drops to 20% of that, and then 10x's again and drops to 20% of that, and has this 45% yearly average gain. But one of the cycles is the last cycle where fiat dies. It has to be. Like, if it just continues to do whatever it does, it's cycles until it's not anymore, and then fiat dies and all the money go into Bitcoin.
Is that a moment in time where adoption is just sufficiently large? Like, the number of individuals and companies that are trying to operate on a Bitcoin standard is some material number of people or percentage of the globe that it sort of happens organically?
Yeah, it's the gradually then suddenly thesis. Yeah. Like, it's some kind of tipping point. Okay. And this has happened with a lot of other, I don't view Bitcoin as a technology. I view it as an agreement or on a fixed set of rules. So in a way, a way of communicating, so like a language. So if you look at, maybe this is a good analogy, if you look at English and how well people from non-English speaking countries spoke English or speak English today and how well they did 20 years back. So in Europe, for instance, both the Germans and the French and the Spanish and every other non-English speaking European country, they were crap at English, like really bad at speaking English. But then the internet happened, and the generations growing up now are good at speaking English because they've done it since they were kids. They know how to do it. I believe something similar will happen in Bitcoin. So you have this generation now where you have enthusiasts that much like the people who chose to learn English at an early age in previous generations, the kids today are growing up with it in a world where it has always existed to them. So they don't find it strange, or like they find it very natural. And I believe a similar thing to what internet did to English, the internet will also do to Bitcoin. And it might take a generation. That's a pretty good guess, I'd say. Like, we probably need the boomer generation to go away, and maybe my generation too, because there's a lot of stubborn people there too. And then Bitcoin just takes over.
A lot of recency bias to overcome, I think, for many people, and particularly people, to your point, of older generations who in many ways benefited from the fiat system to this point, and to try to reimagine how the world could be better is difficult because they've got their second, you know, they've got their condo at the beach and they've got their primary home and they got to buy it when it, you know, was the same price as a sandwich is today. And we need people like myself who have young kids, I think, raising them to understand that there's a new paradigm, there's a better world. This is the monetary gunpowder, and it's second nature to them. I think your the English analogy is a really good one. I think that's a great way.
I've never thought of that before, but that's actually probably how I look at it. Very close to how I look at it. It's not this mass thing at all at once, but it sort of is if you zoom out a bit. Like if this takes 20 years, that's still a very short time period to change the entire world into something completely new, where governments aren't a thing anymore. Like it's a Bitcoin denominated world is a very, very, very different world from the one that we're living in now. And also the boomer generation and all of their money, like very few of them realize that the reason they benefited so much from the fiat system is because it's an exploitative system, and they are on the receiving end of that exploitation. So their friends in politics took all the money from developing nations and the younger generations to fill their own pockets and the pockets of their friends. So that's why the boomers are so successful. It's not because they were better than everyone else at everything. It's because it's an exploitative system by nature. It's designed to funnel wealth into the pockets of the super rich and away from everyone else.
Okay, so you are the man behind the everything over 21 million meme. So everything divided by 21 million. What do you think then? It's a great meme. What do you think the real total addressable market of Bitcoin is? Because you've seen like that chart where, you know, Bitcoin's like the $2 trillion blip on the, tiny little ship on the ocean of global assets. Do you think Bitcoin is simply a monetary tool for transaction, retaining value? Do you think it just eats away at real estate, government, obviously government
everything,
debt?
Everything.
So it really is.
Everything.
So the only thing that exists are people who they own a home because they want to live in it. They own stocks because they understand the company and it's an investment. It's not their savings vehicle the way it kind of is for people now, just trying to beat inflation. Like it's like
they're the Mark Mosses of the world who dig in, they study the 10Ks and they learn about the company and the operating model and they invest in that. But that becomes sort of like a niche subset of how you attain wealth versus
a couple of things here. Happy Infinity Day, by the way. It's tomorrow. It's Bitcoin Infinity Day, the 21st of August. So, all right. So, the many ways in which Bitcoin, a hyper Bitcoinized world, is different to the world we're living in now. Like, I'm gonna give you best case scenario here. So first of all, if all prices are dropping forever, which I think they can, maybe we'll start from adoption. So if you get all 8 billion people to adopt Bitcoin, like, what do you mean by adoption? Do you mean that they have a 5% allocation, a 50% allocation? Or that they're truly living in a hyper, they've hyper Bitcoinized this themselves. They don't have a bank account. They don't use fiat at all. So, and for most people, it goes in steps. Like I'm not fully 100% Bitcoinized yet. I still buy groceries for fiat, for instance. I have to, because there's no one around here that accepts Bitcoin so I can't do everything in Bitcoin yet. I can do more and more every year, but I can't do everything yet. So most people are in that place, right? So even if you get all 8 billion people on board, there's still more money to onboard. So everything can be priced in Bitcoin. There is no end to this. And also, if you have borderless money that you can send via the internet, that means a company does not have to be like this regulated thing where you need a lot of paperwork and you need to go to the bank and sign this and that paper, and you need to go to the notary and sign this and that, and you need an accountant and all a whole plethora of other lubrication companies to protect you from being raped by the government. A company can just be some dudes in a Telegram group who talk to one another and just do things. It's that simple. Because we have frictionless money now. Like, you can employ someone without anyone ever knowing. Like, this is it's so different. And then you get this free market global economy with sound money. It's just insane how much better that is. For instance, if you have deflation in everything, that means people will never have to negotiate their salaries. If you have a fixed salary and it goes up in purchasing power every year, you get richer every year without having ever renegotiated your salary. I think personally that micropayments are a very fiat-y thing. So I think we'll use money less and less the more this plays out. So for instance, right now you have to pay a euro coin to go to the bathroom in the central station in the capital city of name your country in Europe. I think in the future, maybe you buy a subscription to all the train services in Europe forever. Once you can go to the bathroom as much as you like, you get free coffee, because the subscription model is very good for the guy selling it, since the Bitcoin he gets earlier is going to give him more purchasing power in the long run. The earlier you get your Bitcoin, the better. And like, what's true in the fiat world, the opposite is true in Bitcoin. So in fiat, they say that your first million is the hardest, and it gets easier and easier. With sats, it's the exact opposite. The first million is obviously the easiest one to get in Bitcoin, and it gets increasingly harder because they go up in value over time. So they're harder and harder to come by. So it can drive you nuts to think about it, because there's so much. It's so different when you think about prices dropping all the time. And the fear that people would stop buying stuff, it's so unfounded. Like, look at, even in fiat land, some products and some categories of products are still dropping in value all the time. Computers is the big example here. So the price of a megabyte now, as compared to 1986, is like orders of magnitude lower. And people buy more hardware and software than ever.
because we don't stop buying stuff because the price is cheaper. We buy more of it if the price is cheaper. And so all of the fiat paradigm bullshit narratives will go away, and we'll prioritize quality over quantity more. We'll be friendlier to one another. I believe that the Bitcoiners I know that have shown through their actions that they have integrity for the and have done so for 10 years, I would trust them with my life savings. Some of my best friends are in Bitcoin, and I've met them through the internet, and they have shown over the years to be trustworthy. So I think if there is a second best, it's your reputation. If you can build up a really good reputation that you're a trustworthy guy, that will be insanely valuable in the future. And that will enable you to interact with people and value without even using money. So this is, by the way, also why I'm going off on tangents all the time here, but also why KYC is so weird, because the only reason we need money is to enable us to trade with people that we don't trust. So the whole point of money is no KYC. If you know your customer, why do you need money at all? Can't you just trust the guy? Like, it's obvious. So I think the world we're going into is vastly different from the one we live in now in all positive ways. We're just removing aggression from the equation. Aggressing against your fellow man will be less and less profitable, and providing value to your fellow man will be more and more profitable.
Removing aggression from the equation. I love that. Okay, Canute, I got one last question for you. It's the one I ask everyone. What's an unpopular opinion that you have, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with it?
I have an unpopular opinion about... may I give you several answers?
Yeah, you can give me a few. Let's see.
I have an unpopular opinion about which side I'm on in the Israel-Palestine conflict.
Okay.
Whichever side chooses to start eating bacon first, I'm marching for that one. jokes aside, my real unpopular opinion in Bitcoin is that proof of work is a stupid-ass term. And people shouldn't apply proof of work is an unfortunate means to a greater end. So what I mean by that is that a successful hash of a Bitcoin block is not actually proof of work. It's hinting at work. It's proof of results. And that applies to everything else in life. If you're just doing the proof of work thing, so you're doing stuff just for the sake of working, not because the market asked for it, that's very close to Marx's theory of labor theory of value. For instance, there's this guy who writes the word Bitcoin a million times in a book by hand because proof of work. It's completely retarded. No one asked him to do that. The market is not going to pay him for it. It's like digging a hole in your backyard that nobody asked about. It's very proof of work in itself is a very Marxist thing. So I think we should introduce the term proof of results instead and start following the market signals.
I like that. That's a good. A year ago, I probably would have rolled my eyes at you and said, "Who cares?" I'm becoming more appreciative of the importance of nuanced language. Yeah. So I think that's an interesting one. Did you have another one, or was that it?
What's another unpopular? I have a lot of unpopular opinions.
That's why I had you. That's why
there is probably no God is quite unpopular and among Bitcoiners or a certain subsection of them. Democracy sucks, but that's not unpopular anymore.
That's becoming a popular opinion.
Yeah. I guess the most unpopular one is probably that one about proof of work. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Perfect. Well, Canute, you've written some fantastic books. You've got your own content creation engine going. Why don't you tell people where they can find you?
My website is bitcoininfinity.com. I still have a knutswanholm.com, I think. But bitcoininfinity.com, you'll find all my books. And also, I have two shows, the Bitcoin Infinity Show and the Bitcoin Infinity Academy. And they're both on YouTube and all. Rumble, and I post them on X too. We're on Noster, and we're doing all the things. We're on Fountain. And every week I have a new guest on the Infinity Show. It's not for noobs, so it's not an orange pilling show, but more of a conviction deepening show. And the Academy is a show with me and Luke DeWolf, where we read a chapter from each and every one of my books every week and talk about the ideas of that specific chapter. And we've just been through my first book. It's behind me here somewhere. There are all the five books, Sovereignty Through Mathematics, in the corner there, which I wrote back in 2019. And we'll continue with the one with the snake on it, Bitcoin Independence Reimagined, my second book. And this will go on for 2 years because there's a lot of material to go through. So looking forward to that.
Amazing.
And there's a Geyser fund for it too, where you can join our Bitcoin Infinity Academy and get a bunch of perks.
Beautiful. Knut, thank you so much for your time today, man. Great chatting. Hope we can do this again sometime.
Great. It's great talking to you. Great sitting here ranting. Thank you.
Cheers. And that's a wrap. Again, hope you enjoyed my conversation with Knut. Like I said, great guy. Has written some fantastic books. Go check those out. Go check out his shows. Buy some of those books. Follow him on Twitter, Noster, everywhere he is. And of course, if you need help with taking your Bitcoin into proper 100% self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We'd love for you to schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We can talk through self-custody, but we also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones. We have a very, very popular Plan B residency option right now. And we can also help you with all sorts of other things. One of the big ones these days is setting up a solo miner, which we think is very important. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.